everyone, and welcome to the Cool Project Show. I'm your host, Michelle Molyneux, and today we'll be talking with people with cool projects from around the world. Today we're going to be talking with Nels Rayner, owner of Back Ornamental and Structural Steel in Holt, Michigan. Good morning, Nels, and welcome to the Cool Project Show.
Morning.
Okay, now first, let's talk about you and your company and your background, and how did Backsteel started?
Well, I started Backsteel in 1997. I've been an iron worker all my life. I owned a company previous to that, and then I went on salary with a larger steel company and decided I didn't really like that. I wanted to be back in business for myself, and so I started Backsteel, and we started doing mostly structural jobs, and I got involved in some historic truss work, and it kind of caught my eye, you know, that I've always liked old things. I liked working on historic items, and I was always fascinated by the processes, you know, from back in the old days. So I kind of went that direction with it. At first it was kind of slow. It was a tough climb. I mean, there's not a lot of need for blacksmiths and stuff like that in our day and age, but, we struggled through it and we enjoy it. So, that's how we started. We've been in business for some time. We do a lot of ornamental work, handmade handrails and stuff like that. So, that was the beginning of it.
Yeah, and then you also start working on bridges. Just a few weeks ago, we had Julie Bowers from Working Bridges on the show, and she had mentioned you, and that's why I wanted you to be on the show today to talk about some of the, you know, more detailed projects that you have worked on in regards to the bridges. And you've done a wide variety of other things, like you had mentioned the beautiful cast iron handrails that you've done that I've actually looked at your website. One of the things I wanted to ask you is, before we do start talking about some of your projects, can you, you know, help educate us, the novices, or those who don't know very much about the iron forge work and the actual process? If you can maybe explain some of that for us, then we can get a background of the scope of work that needs to be done when you do these things like bridges and rails.
Well, one of the big things that we, in our claims to fame, is that we do hot rivets, which is something that's, I mean, they did a little of it back in the 70s, but it started to phase out. When the world started going to high-strength bolts, rivets really fell by the wayside, mostly because of time constraints. You know, it was a lot faster to put a bolt in an item than it was to put a rivet in it. And that process, it came to us more of a studying on it, trying to find the equipment was kind of exciting. And then there was a gentleman that I was my teacher at the community college, Vern Messler, that said, well, you know, I got some connections with some of this equipment that you're going to need. And we got together and started doing it. And I don't know, it caught my eye, and it was more of the love of it. I mean, the process is, it's kind of tedious, you know. You got to take something and heat it up and then smash it. So,
it's very physical.
Is it
a long process, though, to make these rivets?
Not really. I mean, compared to bolts, we can compete against it, which is, it's kind of known now. The state of Michigan, we're actually doing four projects in Michigan for the Michigan Department of Transportation that require rivets. But a lot of that has to do with the fact that we've put our name out there and said, look, we can compete, you know, we can do these things still. Because a lot of people think that, you know, no one can do rivets anymore.
Right.
And it's really kind of a small part of historic trusses is a small part of it. I mean, putting rivets in, it's great. But being able to look at the bridge and know, you know, what's wrong with it and how we're going to go about fixing it and how they would have done it back in the day, you know, that's been the struggle. Because there's no one left out there that's worked on a truss bridge. I mean, they stopped making truss bridges back in the early 1900s. So it's not like we've had a mentor to help us do it. But, but we, like I said, it's more of a love.
Right. Can you maybe explain what is a truss bridge, just for the audience?
There's some famous ones around. If you go on TV and you see a car commercial, odds are that if they're driving across a bridge, they're going to be driving through an old truss bridge. It has a what they call a top cord. So the bridge has an inclined end post and a top cord with a bunch of lattice work across it with verticals hanging down, and then it'll have a bottom cord, which is either a series of bars or a riveted connection down at the bottom, and the roadway goes through it. And that would be a truss bridge. I mean, you can drive over the top of them too. There's deck trusses with all that is suspended underneath versus being on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
If it was built in the 1900s, odds are it's a truss bridge, you know, or in 1800s. So,
right, and there seems to be. I get the impression now that there is a big push now, or maybe a big push to start saving some of these truss bridges. Would you say that?
Yeah.
Correct, or is it a battle to try and save them?
It's a battle, but it's also. The generations coming up, you know, are realizing that, you know, we drop them in the river by the hundreds every year, and they're slowly disappearing. There's a lot of truss bridges out there that they're no longer, you know, that particular type, there's no more of them left. And those are the ones that we pursue the most and the hardest. I mean, we actually go out and make cold calls to try to save old abandoned bridges that are. There's a couple in Illinois that are, you know, from 1869 that are buried out in the woods that, you know, they're a couple years older or a couple years newer than that state, you know, was formed, you know. So and people don't realize how important they were, you know. These were so important back in the 1800s that they were cherished too. So, and every now and then, you know, you'll run into a family that's really attached to a bridge. You know, yeah, you know, I can remember as a kid, and my grandfather told me that when he was a kid, he used to fish on this bridge, and there's a push to save some of them, and then there's also a lot of engineers and municipalities. They don't want them because they have to be maintained, and you know, they have all kinds of complaints about them. But in actuality, you think about it, you know, some of these bridges have been in service for 150 years, and we don't build bridges today that are made to last that long. So they were doing something right back then.
Right, right.
You know.
Yeah. You said you did cold calling. So how do you actually find these bridges?
Oh, I got a guy that works with me that runs a website called historicbridges.org, and he surfs the internet, and he started a website years ago that covers pretty much all the historic bridges in the United States. So we know where these bridges are at. Getting to the right people is the hard part, and Julie from Working Bridges is great at that. And,
right.
You know, some of the stuff that she's done is miraculous. It's unheard of. It kind of baffles us because we've been trying for years to save these trusses, and Julie is just, she's got a knack for it, so.
Right.
We've gotten quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's very passionate about it.
So. Now, with so when you do find these bridges, you know, what do you do? Do you go to the owners and say, hey, we want to buy this bridge? Or how does it work where you actually get to convince them to repair or restore these bridges?
Well, I'll give you an example of the one that we're doing in Michigan, the Martin Road Bridge. We went to the county, Shiawassee County, and said, you have this bridge going across the Shiawassee River that's going to collapse eventually. The abutments are being washed away, and it's in dire straits. Would you be interested in letting us have this bridge because we think we found a home for it? And, of course, they were all fired up about it. Yeah, please, we'll let you take it. Because it's either you pay me, you know, they pay to have us take it out of the river after it collapses, or they don't pay us and we take it and we find a home for it and it lives another 150 years, you know. So, and it's a 1800s bridge, late 1800s bridge, so they were real receptive to it. Another example would be in Nebraska, we've got a couple bridges that we're looking at that they're abandoned, but there's pushback from the people that own the property by the bridge. They like looking at it and blah, blah. Eventually the bridge is going to collapse because it needs to be taken care of. But so odds are we won't be able to get that bridge. We turn that over to Julie to see what she can do with it. But a lot of times these municipalities, because they don't want the liability, if someone was to get hurt on the bridge or if it is to collapse and they have to take it out of the river, you know, that costs the municipality money. So a lot of them will be real receptive to having us come in and take them.
Right.
Which is, we're happy about that.
Yeah.
I got a little collection of them out in my yard. I got five that we took out of a county in southern Michigan. So
you must have a very large yard.
No, actually, I don't. I don't. That's the funny part. But, you know, they really don't take up that much room when you take them apart. So,
okay.
You just got to be very, you know, meticulous where you put them.
Right. And how long does it take to take a truss bridge apart?
Well, it depends on the size of it. Like this one that is in Shiawassee County is about 120 feet long. It's going to take us probably about 5 days to get it off the river. So, it would take us less time if we could get a crane in there to do it, but we're going to have to disassemble this bridge over the water, so it's going to take a little bit more time.
Right. Well, that's amazing. Well, when we come right back, we're going to talk a little bit more about bridges and other projects that Nels has from Back Steel. We'll be right back with messages from our sponsors.
It's not just your garden. It's the way you live. And there's so much to know. But you have help. Bonnie Plants. Now with Bonnie's app, Homegrown, you can learn about veggie and herb varieties, track and record your garden with photos and notes, share on Facebook and Twitter, and so much more. How'd you ever grow without it? Get Homegrown with Bonnie Plants for iPhone and Android. The more you know, the better you can grow with Bonnie.
This is Dr. Susan Blank, host of Detailing Addiction on America's Web Radio. Please join us at 4 p.m. on Tuesday afternoons.
This is Dr. George from Peachtree ENT Center. We've won patient care awards and have the highest patient recommendations because we believe in practicing medicine the old-fashioned way. Practicing good medicine is based in listening to the patient and making a care plan that is individual. The best medical care is given when there is a strong doctor-patient relationship built on mutual trust and respect. At Peachtree ENT Center, we believe in taking care of the whole patient because healing is more than writing a prescription. Whether you have problems hearing, have frequent throat or sinus infections, from the time you call our office and speak to a real person, you'll be treated as an individual and not as an ailment. During your visit, you will not be rushed and all your questions will be answered. When possible, natural treatments will be recommended to fix the problem. If surgery is recommended, cost-effective, minimally invasive treatment for snoring, sleep apnea, or sinus problems will be offered because Peachtree ENT Center is where patient care counts.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Cool Project Show. And today we have Nels from Backsteel talking about his company and his passion for restoring bridges and other anything dealing with steel. So, Nels, before we went to the break, we were actually talking about some of the projects. And recently there was a big announcement out of the state of Delaware. Can you tell us a little bit more about this amazing project?
Yeah, it's, if there's ever been a golden goose, it would have to be this project in Delaware. It was like when you get the call that they're interested in 3 to 5 bridges, you kind of think there's just no way, you know, there's no way that this can really be happening. And I was always taught that if it's too good to be true, it's too good to be true. But when they sent the first contract to us, I went, wow, this is huge. And we went out there and met with them, and the project is so neat. They've taken an old mill site where there was they made fiber, like a heavy cardboard at the old mill, and they've converted it into this park, and they decided that in the trail system they wanted to use historic trusses, and they wanted them to come from various places around the United States, so our job became going and locating these bridges for them, and we linked up. The whole project is because of Working Bridges. Working Bridges is the one that took it to the table and landed the deal. And so me and Julie and Jim Schiffer from the Schiffer Group went around and we located some bridges we'd take a bridge and send photographs of it to the DNR, which is the Department of Natural Resources in Delaware, and say, what do you think about this bridge? They would pick one, and one of the bridges was a bridge that Julie was closely tied to in Iowa that I dug out of the river about 5 years ago, and that's the one we're working on right now, which is a bowstring that was built in late 1800s. So it's just amazing, and we've got what they call a Haupt Trust that we're trying to get out of Pennsylvania, and we have another bridge that we took out of Pennsylvania, and then we've got one that we've acquired out of Oregon that's going to go to this site. So it's just it's amazing. It's amazing that they're that interested in this, and if you understand the part, you can see why they have the largest collection of Stanley steamers in the United States, and they like to give tours through this park with the Stanley steamers. So they want to go across all these bridges, which is just amazing. So that's the project.
It's like a sanctuary park for truss bridges.
Correct.
How I see it. And how long is this project going to take?
Oh, wow. The first group of bridges that we're working on right now, we should have 3 of them in by the end of the year. And then there's another group coming in the following year. So far, we've got about 2 years worth of work out there. And there's a land conservancy that's attached to this park that, since the interest of the DNR was to put these truss bridges in, they've contacted us and are interested in having another group of bridges. So my hopes is it'll never be ending. So
I would
love to have a job like that. So
yes, and. So for them, they've already mapped out the layout of the land and where these bridges are going to go, or are they still more bridges and continue growing this park?
Yeah, they've got the first 3, they've got a good layout where they want to put them. They're going to start putting a buck in here in the next month or so. there's a large one that they're vacillating back and forth about where they want to put it. That's the one that's coming out of Oregon. That's a 300-foot bridge, so that's a very large truss bridge, amazing bridge.
Has it been taken down, or?
That bridge was taken down about 10 years ago, and we weren't involved in the disassembly of that bridge, but the way they took it apart is just amazing. It's like brand new. The bridge itself was never open to vehicular traffic. It had water mains, big water lines running across it. So it, you know, it's never had road salt or road wear done to it. So it's pristine. It's a beautiful bridge. Wow. Beautiful. So.
And that's in storage right now?
Correct. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And we'll transport that back here. And do some minor, you know, repairs. But there's, you know, steel eventually, it'll get rust marks in it, you know, and pack rust in it. And we'll remove that. It might have some lost rivets in it. And when they disassembled it, they had to cut certain parts. So we'll have to do a little work to it, but not much. And then, you know, the big project with that bridge will be to have it painted. So,
I'm just trying to get the scope of the size of the pieces. So when it's being transported to Delaware, is it through a trucking service or is it through rail?
Yeah, it'll be trucked out there. Now, they do have an idea of the, they have a railway that goes through this park too. And they have a historic train, and they're talking about the area where they want to put this truss bridge. They want to maybe transport the parts on the train to the area where we're going to assemble it, and which would be really cool. When people, you know, when you tell people it's a 300-foot bridge, when you take it all apart, we could put up that whole bridge on probably three trucks, maybe four. So
wow.
Yeah, it gets pretty compact when it's all taken apart. And now, the pieces, you know, vary, but 45 feet's about the longest piece you'll have.
Right. That would make for an interesting convoy.
Yeah.
Now, you talked, because this really is such an amazing project that's just been announced. How much of an impact has that had for your business? Because I know, you know, the world economy has been pretty rough for everyone. So this must be just an amazing, you know, opportunity for you. And what kind of an impact has this had for you?
Oh, when the economy took a downturn in Michigan in 07, in 08, it devastated my company. We did a lot of, house beam work and stuff like that, and that all disappeared. Like someone turned the lights off that quick. We shipped a load of house beams out on Friday, and come Monday, we never shipped another beam out, and, we went from a 9-man employee, you know, I had 9 employees down to, there was 3 of us. And then it went down to 2. And last year, at this time last year, we were debating whether we were going to close the doors or not. And then this Delaware project came along, and I partnered up with a couple of guys that are good friends of mine, and we pursued it, and we were doing a Delaware project. We got some projects in Michigan that we're doing too, also, that are historic metal projects. We did a lighthouse in St. Joe that we riveted and restored 2 steel lighthouses and the elevated walkway. And it's been an amazing year. This is the most amazing year that Box Steel's ever had. It's off the chart. The best year ever. So,
is
it? My faith is, it's always been there. You know, I devoted a year solely to historic trusses. I had a gentleman come to me and say that, you know, would you hire me and we could see if we could really pursue this historic truss stuff. And, because I've been involved with it for so long that it has always been my passion to protect these bridges, is right. What it really comes down to. We lose them by the hundreds. Every year, you hear about them being blown up and dropped in the river and turned into scrap. And we make jokes about it, you know, that, you know, a truss bridge goes down, it becomes a Kia, you know, and people driving around afterwards. So, you know, it's sad that we're dropping our history that quickly. And some of these bridges are just, there's nothing wrong with them. It's just they, you know, they come up with this attitude that they've outlived their usefulness, you know, because they need a 8-lane bridge and not a 5-lane bridge, you know, and it's sad. So, what's that?
No, I was just saying, you know, we need to have some more parks or other ways to reuse these bridges.
Correct. I mean, that's what we try to emphasize, too, that we can still use them for pedestrian use. And we've gone to golf course architects and said, look, you know, don't you think a small pony truss would look a lot better than 2 I-beams with some wood laid on top of it, you know, something that's from the 1800s. And we can offer that to these people. And some of them bite at it, you know. It's been a tough sale, but it's, the market's opening up. We attacked it well enough so that our name is out there and people are contacting us and saying, you know, hey, you know, we're interested in saving our bridge. And, you know, while I was in Delaware, I looked at another project. It was a land conservancy that wants to save a bridge that, odds are we'll be able to do it, you know, and come in under their budget. So, and that's the big thing is some of the budgets that are put out there to save these bridges by engineers and DOTs that are just off the chart. I mean, it's ridiculous what they want to get paid, and we can't really make sense of it sometimes. It's ridiculous, right. So. But they just want them gone, you know.
Yeah, and so they've, you know, put the prices up really high to make it
exactly
impossible to save when
exactly.
It really isn't. I know. So now you had mentioned some other projects. You know, looking at your website, and I do encourage everyone to check out your website, and we'll post that up afterwards. You had some military projects up there?
We did a job at an armory. It was it became a United Way's in there now, but it was the old Marshall Street Armory, and they wanted to restore it back to its historic look. So we came up with some ideas for them. You know, let's build an arch, you know, driveway, and let's build some arches inside the offices, And the architectural firm that we worked with, Studio Intrigue, came up with the canopies and the archway. They did a great job, and it looks like something from the early 1900s. So it's not really an armory anymore, but it was at one time it was. I remember it as a kid. You know, it was where it's where all the dances were and stuff.
Oh, wow. but it's being preserved, basically.
Exactly. Yep.
Yeah. And that's the important thing as well. Okay, so
exactly.
What we're going to do is we're going to have a quick break, and then when we come back, we'll talk about some more of your amazing projects, and then we'll also talk a little bit more about the future of the iron forging and training, maybe. We'll be right back.
The disease of addiction is a life-altering challenge, not just for the person suffering its effects, but also for the family and friends who support and love the one caught in its grasp. What should be the course of treatment? Who is the best person to render treatment? And what is the best place to go for the care that is needed? We know that you want answers to these and many more questions. Call 770-696-9862 and speak to a representative of the Atlanta Healing Center. They can tailor a program specifically designed to address the needs of the person suffering with an addiction or give you guidance as to where that help may be found. Information is the key, and the trained staff at AHC is here to assist. If you wish, you can also get more information on the website located at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
Watchdog is a term given an organization like the United States Justice Foundation, which since 1979 has been watching out and, when necessary, taking the appropriate action, from testifying to litigating, to protect our constitutional rights. USJF, a nonprofit organization, is nationally recognized not only as a watchdog, but many in the government, as well as those involved in legal cases, have also called the USJF a bulldog for the tenacious approach in their presentation and proof of what is right. Find out more at www.usjf.net. Support USJF as they support you.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Cool Project Show. And again, we have Miles from Backsteel on the show, who's talking to us about bridges, some pretty amazing projects, and also the importance of ironworks. Now, Miles, can you tell us a little bit more some of the other projects that you have been doing in the past and what you have?
Well, we were talking about the armory that we did. We took an old armory and we did the steel restoration on it. That was a really cool project. I mean, it had a canopy in the back that's got 50 caliber gun casings, that ribbon it, and then we put raised letters on it, and we riveted some of it together. We built some arch trusses inside, that you'll see on our website. All that stuff, I mean, the canopy was designed by Studio Intrigue, but the archways were designed from our end. I mean, we came up with the idea of how we could tie these walls in and make it look cool. And because it has rivets in it, and I'm a riveter, so I like rivets. And then, one of the real cool projects that we're working on right now is a lighthouse restoration that we're doing in St. Joseph, Michigan, which is it's been a fairly large project. We've been there for it's coming close to almost a year, and we restored the elevated walkway that goes out to the lights, and then we did a bunch of the steel restoration on the lighthouses, and we replicated the old steel doors that were on the lighthouse, the inner and the outer light. We riveted those all together and installed those. So that's been a real neat project.
Is that going to be a tourist attraction, or is it going to be functioning?
It is a functioning lighthouse, both of them. They're owned by the Coast Guard, but they are going to give tours out there, as far as I know. I'm pretty sure they're going to open up the inner light and use it for souvenirs and stuff like that. The light will always work. As far as I know, that's the direction they're going with it. It's a famous fishing pier because it sticks out in the water so far. It's about a quarter of a mile long, maybe a little bit longer than that. So it's, like I said, it was a fairly large project. Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
Wow. What's been some of your most challenging projects, and why?
To be honest with you, the bridge that we're working on right now for Julian Working Bridges that's going to the DNR in Delaware is probably one of the most challenging jobs because the bridge was completely destroyed. It collapsed in a flood and was washed down river. I spent 3 weeks digging it out of the river, and then we've replicated a lot of the parts for it. And the problem that we have with this bridge is that there are no blueprints on it, and it's called a bowstring, so it's an arched bridge, and it's not a true circle. It's a parabolic, and to come up with the radiuses to replace some of the material that was destroyed in it has been a challenge, but we like that. We like that part of it, you know, coming up with, you know, how are we going to come up with this dimension here? And it's because we've had to we didn't have any of the vertical members were all destroyed. All the diagonal members were destroyed, so we've had to replicate all that, and so that project right there has probably been our most challenging. they're all a little bit of a challenge just because no one's really sure how some of these bridges were put together. There's no documentation how the erectors put them back together or assembled them. In the ways that they did assemble them, in our society, we're not allowed to do the things that they're allowed to do. You know, we can't put things in the rivers to support these bridges temporarily without doing all kinds of crazy things like put coffer dams in and real expensive stuff. So we have to come up with alternate ways of being able to assemble them and put them in. I mean, one of the advantages that we have that they didn't is the size of cranes that we have today. You know, we can pump up our lifting abilities substantially to what those people could do to lift a member, you know. So that helps, but it's always a challenge to think, you know, they must have started here and went this way, you know.
Right.
Because there's no one out there to tell you, yeah, that's right, or no, that's wrong. So some of it's trial by error because we put them together wrong before and kind of look, you know, you stand back and look at it and go, wow, man, that isn't going to work. And somehow you got it up there and you got to make it work. So, you know, another great thing that we have our welding machine, so you know we can build stuff to support them to help us along the way. But so they're all a little bit of a challenge. But I'd say the one that's in the yard right now is probably the biggest challenge we have is the McIntyre.
The McIntyre Bridge.
Yeah, it came out of Iowa, and Julie fought hard and long to save that bridge. I met her, contacted me to save her bridge, and shortly after that, it collapsed in a flood, and it became a mess, and she was completely heartbroken, and I came out there and looked at it laying in the river and said, we can fix it. So here we are. We're fixing it.
I love that attitude that you have done.
I think that, yeah, I do. I think that this project that we're on right now will be, the DNR will be the project in Delaware will be an amazing project. It'll show people what can be done with these old trusses, the beauty that they really, in the settings that these people are putting them in, are going to really emphasize, you know, how pristine and beautiful these structures really are. I think that project is quite amazing.
Now, you also have, and we were talking during the break, a passion for cars. So tell us a little bit about the hot rod as well that you've done and some of the things you've done around cars as well.
Well, in my spare time, I've always, you know, anything old has always been my motto. I love dabbling in all of it. I got involved in... First it was motorcycles, and I figured, heck, I could build a motorcycle, you know, so I did, and then I thought, well, heck, if I can do a motorcycle, I can do a car. Well, motorcycles only got two wheels, and the car's got four, so they're a little bit more of a struggle, but we built a rat rod. We won some contests with it, too. It's a pretty intense little automobile. It's unique. It's not a long trip automobile, that's for sure. It's kind of rough riding, but we get a lot of looks at it when you're driving it. I mean, if I parked it along a Lamborghini in a parking lot, I'd get more looks than the Lamborghini would. I guarantee that. So the body came off a 37 Ford. The motor came out of a 59 Mercury. Or 51 Merc. It's a 1949 Mercury motor. And the front part of the frame is the only thing that's left. And that came out of a 24 Hudson. And then the wheels came off of a, I think a Model A. And I had those sandblasted in. And they're true spoked wheels. So I got them sandblasted and then powder coated, and then the back of the truck, I built the side rails for the box. It's really not a box. It's just two pieces of sheet metal. But we riveted it all together with copper rivets, and then we built the suspension on it. I've got another one that I want to build. It's a 29 or a 30 sedan. But we got so many bridges in the yard right now that we don't have much time to work on it. And then I've got some other trucks. I got a 69 Ford one of our big things is we don't like paint. You know, we want to keep the original paints, or we sand them down to bare metal and then clear coat them. I love the craftsmanship that went into anything old. I mean, it just, it's amazing what they used to do. So, I mean, if you close the door on a modern day car and it sounds like a piece of plastic, and you close the door on a 1969 and you can feel the weight in the metal. So,
right.
And you said your dad used to paint cars.
My father used to do spray painting of cars, and just loved to experiment with paint and you also make handmade ornaments even. So not even big bridges, but you also do small intricate stuff.
Yeah, we do a lot of forge work where. I'm not going to claim to be a super master blacksmith. I'd love to be. I wish I had the time to take that to another level, but I don't. But any rails or ornamental rails that we do, we make the scrolls and we'll pound out flowers is a big thing with me. I love flowers. So, and small sculptures, we've done some of that, but anything that has anything to do with forging, we're pretty good at. We make knives, too. We have a weekend thing where a friend of mine who's a big knife enthusiast, we got involved in making Damascus steel knives. We make them out of all kinds of goofy things. We'll take cable and make them out of cable or motorcycle chains and stuff like that. And, and forge welding, it's a lost art. It's something that, and with the historic trusses, it's a big part of it. Anything that was welded back in the late 1800s all the way into the early 1900s, people don't realize that it wasn't welded with a machine. It was welded by hand. It was heated, and fluxed and then pounded on, and it forged it together and formed a forge weld. And, so that's something that I've taught myself how to do. That we were just talking about it yesterday, being able to do the lower cords of a bridge and being able to forge that material. Of the accuracy these guys had back in the 1800s is just how did they do it? Some of it's just amazing, that they can get tolerances within a hundredth of an inch because it's a very violent process. I mean, you heat this thing up to 2600 degrees and then smash it with a hammer, four or five guys hitting it with a hammer that are and get a hole that's within a hundredth of an inch of the one they did prior to that. That stuff just amazes me. So forging is a hats off to them. I mean, and hats off to all there are some super master blacksmiths out there they got my prism system. It's a lost art. It's a very difficult thing, and they don't get paid enough for their time and they put into doing it. So
we'll be right back, and then we'll talk a little bit more about lost art and how we can bring it out. Okay, we'll be right back.
When four members of Congress all die within 4 months, each of their deaths appears to be from natural causes. But when mysterious messages begin to appear in the form of quotations from long-dead revolutionary heroes, one reporter sets out to prove the existence of a serial killer. His search discovers dark secrets and an assassin shielded by people who need the very services that only he can provide. The Sun Silas Rising, a novel by Doug Dahlgren. On Kindle or paperback through Amazon.com.
Don't be hoodwinked by the left, who wants you to believe the fairy tale that we can power America on butterflies, rainbows, and pixie dust. I'm Marita Noon. Get the truth about energy on my show, America's Voice for Energy, only on America's Web Radio.
Perhaps you are struggling to cope with the disease of addiction. If not, you probably know a family member or friend that needs help in battling the cravings and the personal and professional damage done by the effects of drugs or alcohol. Get a pen and paper and be ready to write down the following. These are the issues that the trained staff at the Atlanta Healing Center address and treat every day. Their doctors and counselors with over 40 years of practice in the field of addiction can treat the suffering individual in a thoughtful, compassionate, and experienced manner and guide him or her along the path to recovery. So call 770-696-9862 and speak to a knowledgeable staff member about how you or your loved one can be helped to enjoy a better and healthier life. More information is also available on the website at www.atlantahealingcenter.com.
This is americaswebradio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
Welcome back to the Cool Project Show and our last segment of this today's amazing show with Niles from Backsteel. Niles, in this last segment, I really want to talk about the iron, ironworks industry and the future of it. Can you tell us, you know, as an industry as a whole, is there a demand for this?
Slowly. The preservation of old trusses and stuff, it's kind of slow for it. But as steelwork as an industry, yeah, there's a large demand and there's a large shortage of employees for this kind of work. Most definitely, it's one of the biggest challenges we have is finding people that want to do this kind of work. The younger generation, it seems, doesn't have a lot of interest in it. I don't know if it's so much not a lot of interest or if it's the fact that the work is kind of hard. So we struggle with that, but there is a large demand for it.
Right. And now you had mentioned, during the break, what you used to do with your kids is get them to draw pictures and then you'll cut them out in steel, which is a great way to actually get kids to be connected into this industry as well.
Yeah, when my sons and daughters were in elementary school, I'd have their class come down here and they would I'd have all the kids draw a picture on a piece of steel. And because children draw simply, too, for one thing. There were never any real super intricate drawings, but I would take a plas cutter and I'd cut that out for them and then present it to them, you know, the next day or the day after that. And my idea was that if we instill this stuff like it was instilled in me at a young age, that there's a little spark there, you know, that, hey, you know, I was pretty good at this or I really enjoyed this. And even at a young age, you know, I was 12 years old when I made a decision that I really wanted to get involved in the steel industry. And I was blessed. My father was an art professor at MSU, and I was involved in the arts and, had access to the sculpture lab. I really like to try to do that with kids today, you know, that, hey, you know, it's not just hard work, it's fun. It's neat to stand back at the end of the day and look at what you've produced at the end of the day, something physical.
Right. Something that you can really, tactile, something that you can really stand back
and appreciate. Right. Exactly. You can be proud of it, you know. You spent the time doing it, and this is what it produced. So, and my son's involved in it now, he'll be out of high school this year and he enjoys it. But again, he's been around it all his life. So.
Now, do you find it hard, to find qualified people, for the kind of work that you do?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, as far as the bridge restoration part goes, most of that stuff is so far gone. You know, the people that did the bridges that we're involved with, they're long gone. So most of that stuff is very teachable for us. And that's one of the things that we always emphasize to people. You know, you bring the body in, we'll teach your mind how to do some of this stuff. Because there's no classrooms for it. There's no classrooms for riveting, and there's no classrooms for forge welding. Well, I shouldn't say that. There is, but they're far and in between. It's not like it's a college course that you could take. The hard part is getting people that want to learn it. You know, they want to spend the time and the extra time to learn how to do some of the stuff. And I'm not saying that they aren't out there. It's just that they're rare and they don't come wandering into my shop every day, that's for sure. So, we struggle with it sometimes.
How do you see the future? Do you see, now we've talked about some of the engineers, and you know, they would soon rather take down an old bridge or and build something new. And we talked about quality. Do you see that eventually engineers will look to the past to be realized quality is of utmost importance?
You know, they have to. I mean, it's a proven fact that some of these bridges have been standing for 150 years and they're still standing. And bridges, you know, today that are failing that are brand new. And we used to say that, you know, it's the younger generation. You know, they just don't want nothing to do with it. But actually, we've had more engineers from bridge generation want these historic bridges than some of the old guard. They're actually interested in protecting their heritage. And I think that's one of the things that we really try to emphasize, that, you know, we're keeping our heritage forever. People want to save the old county courthouse, but if there's a truss bridge that's 50 years older than that, they don't have any problem tearing that down and scrapping it. And to change their minds about that has been kind of a struggle, but I think that more and more it's coming around to people are realizing that they're, you know, it's just like a species that becomes extinct. You know, these bridges are starting to, they used to litter and now they're slowly disappearing. And people want to save them. You know, more and more municipalities, more people in the town stand up and say, no, we don't want a new slab of concrete. We want to save our old truss bridge. And we know that it can be done because it's being done all across. So let's get a hold of these guys. They can do it.
Right.
And this has been the best year ever. I mean, we've had more phone calls this year than we've ever had. You know, can you help us save our bridge? One of the big problems we have is if people don't act immediately, you know, if they keep putting it off, thinking, well, I'll do that tomorrow, eventually it gets to the point where it's too late to even try to save it. I mean, you can't call me when they're pulling the deck off of it and getting ready to blow it up and say, can you save my bridge? Because,
right.
No, I can't. I can't stop them from doing it, man.
Save. It doesn't have to be a bridge for cars. I've seen some papers where they've taken bridges and they've converted them into even, you know, walking pathways or gardens or even children play areas.
Exactly, and that's one of our big, that we push that look at, if you don't want to use this bridge here, let's at least save it and put it in a park, you know, because they are there. People don't realize until they're out in the open and you look at them how beautiful they really are. And we've done some projects like that, and we're getting more calls about that. And that's one, and exactly, if you want a three-lane bridge or a two-lane bridge, and this truss bridge is only a single lane and it doesn't meet your load requirements, that's fine. Let's take it out kindly and save it, though, because it's the last of its kind, or it's, you know, there's three more of them left in the United States like this. That's one of the things that we emphasize to them, because they are. I mean, there's a couple bridges out there. There's only one of them known to exist. So we've dropped so many of them and destroyed so many of them because of, you know, technology and the drive to get somewhere. You know, we got to get someplace quick. So we can't have a one-lane bridge. We got to have a two-lane bridge. Or but you don't understand. That's the only one of that kind left. So we don't really want to destroy it. Let's save it. Put it in your park, or put it off to the side and restore it and use it for your sidewalk or your, you know, your bikeways. All that stuff's becoming real big. So I think that we're moving towards that where we can save more and more of these and use them for purposes other than traffic, you know, automobiles and trucks. So.
And I think that also goes for any of the other projects that you have worked on, from the lighthouse to the armory, that it can be repurposed and be used for something else.
Exactly. I mean, why replace that armory with a building that you can build in 6 months that has no feel to it whatsoever? I mean, if you walk into an old house or an old building, the first thing that I think of is just think of all the people that have walked through this, you know, and seen this. And to just throw that away, just it baffles me. Especially since it's probably better built than anything we can build now, because they took their time and they took a lot of pride in their craftsmanship, and it's still a beautiful building, you know. And the same thing goes with bridges or lighthouses. Even the lighthouses are just amazing. I mean, if you really think about what went into building some of these lighthouses, it's just incredible how they put them together.
Right.
The struggles that they had to work with, we could take it out, we could get rid of it and build something, but we could probably do it a lot faster than they did, but we wouldn't go through the struggles they went through in 1906 when they put this thing up. So I think it's all worth saving to me. I mean,
sure.
I don't know of a truss bridge out there that's not worth saving. It's,
yeah.
The craftsmanship that went into it is amazing. So.
Yeah, and it's craftsmanship that we should all maintain in learning and understanding as well. Now, we have a few more moments to go before we wrap up for the show, but how did we get a hold of you?
I got a website that's boxsteel.com, and we do have a Facebook page, the same thing. And my email address is Nels, N-E-L-S, at boxsteel.com. We love hearing from people. We love saving bridges. Anytime that we respond to everything. So they're all worthwhile. So that's how you get a hold of me.
Oh, that's fantastic. And we're so thankful that you've actually come on to the show for us. And if you do need to get a hold of me or Niles as well, you can also email us at coolprojects@americaswebradio.com. That's coolprojects, spelled with a K. You can also follow Nels and Julie with their Working Bridge projects, or Cool Projects. And Niles, I really do want to thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a pleasure. And let's get out there, America, and save some more of these amazing truss bridges. Niles, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. It's been a true pleasure. I love talking about them, so, and as much as I like saving them.
Well, you know what? I think we're going to definitely have you back on board for another interview to talk about the Delaware project. I'm
awesome.
Very excited to know more about that. So we'll have you and Julie on together maybe to talk about the progress of that project.
It'd be my pleasure.
Thank you very much, and thank you, everyone, for listening to the Cool Project Show. Have a great day.
This is AmericasWebRadio.com, the best in chat radio designed just for you.
It's not just your garden.